Chapter 157. Because I may go in to explain it to her. Here, standing on the hearth with his wet hat and shawls in his hand, himself a pile of wet, he turned to Mrs. Snagsby. Now, the first thing that I say to you, as a married woman possessing what you may call charms, you know, believe me, if all those endearing, apostrophe and cetera you're well acquainted with the song, because it's in vain for you to tell me that you and good society are strangers' charms attractions. Mind you, that ought to give you confidence in yourself is that you've done it. Mrs. Snagsby looked rather alarmed, relented a little and faltered. What did Mr. Bucket mean? What does Mr. Bucket mean? He repeated, and I saw by his face that all the time he talked he was listening for the discovery of the letter, to my own great agitation, for I knew then how important it must be. I'll tell you what he means, ma'am. Go and see Othello acted. That's the tragedy for you. Mrs. Snagsby consciously asked why. Why? Said Mr. Bucket. Because you'll come to that, if you don't look out. Why, at the very moment while I speak, I know what your mind's not wholly free from respecting this young lady. But shall I tell you who this young lady is? Now, come, you're what I call an intellectual woman with your soul too large for your body, if you come to that, and chafing it and you know me, and you recollect where you saw me last, and what was talked of in that circle. Don't you? Yes. Very well. This young lady is that young lady. Mrs. Snagsby appeared to understand the reference better than I did at the time. And Toey him as you call Joe was mixed up in the same business, and no other, and the law writer that you know of was mixed up in the same business, and no other, and your husband, with no more knowledge of it than your great-grandfather, was mixed up by Mr. Tulkinghorn, deceased, his best customer, in the same business, and no other, and the whole biling of people was mixed up in the same business, and no other, and yet a married woman, possessing your attractions, shuts her eyes and sparklers too, and goes and runs her delicate formed head against a wall. Why, I am ashamed of you. I expected Mr. Woodcourt might have got it by this time. Mrs. Snagsby shook her head and put her handkerchief to her eyes. Is that all? Said Mr. Bucket excitedly. No. See what happens. Another person mixed up in that business and no other, a person in a wretched state, comes here tonight, and is seen a speaking to your maidservant, and between her and your maidservant there passes a paper that I would give £100 for, down. What do? You hide and you watch him, and you pounce upon that maidservant knowing what she's subject to, and what a little thing will bring him on in that surprising manner, and with that severity that, by the Lord, she goes off and keeps off, when a life may be hanging upon that girl's words. He so thoroughly meant what he said now that I involuntarily clasped my hands, and felt the room turning away from me. But it stopped. Mr. Woodcourt came in, put a paper into his hand, and went away again. Now, Mrs. Snagsby, the only amends you can make, said Mr. Bucket, rapidly glancing at it, is to let me speak a word to this young lady in private here. And if you know of any help that you can give to that gentleman in the next kitchen there, or can think of any one thing that's likelier than another to bring the girl round, do your swiftest and best. In an instant she was gone, and he had shut the door. Now, my dear, you're steady and quite sure of yourself? Quite, said one. Whose writing is that? It was my mother's. A pencil writing, on a crushed and torn piece of paper, blotted with wet. Folded roughly like a letter, and directed to me at my guardian's. You know the hand, he said, and if you are firm enough to read it to me, do. But be particular to a word. It had been written in portions, at different times. I read what follows. I came to the cottage with two objects. First, to see the dear one, if I could, once more, but only to see her, not to speak to her, or let her know that I was near. The other object, to elude pursuit, and to be lost. Do not blame the mother for her share. The assistance that she rendered on my strongest assurance that it was for the dear one's good. You remember her dead child. The men's consent I bought, but her help was freely given. I came. Apostrophe that was written, said my companion, when she rested there. It bears out what I made of it. I was right. The next was written at another time. I have wandered a long distance, and for many hours, and I know that I must soon die. These streets. I have no purpose but to die. When I left, I had a worse, but I am saved from adding that guilt to the rest. Cold, wet, and fatigue are sufficient causes for my being found dead, but I shall die of others, though I suffer from these. It was right that all that had sustained me should give way at once, and that I should die of terror and my conscience. Take courage, said Mr. Bucket. There's only a few words more. Those two were written at another time. To all appearance, almost in the dark. I have done all I could do to be lost. I shall be soon forgotten so, and shall disgrace him least. I have nothing about me by which I can be recognized. This paper I part with now. The place where I shall lie down, if I can get so far, has been often in my mind. Farewell. Forgive. Mr. Bucket, supporting me with his arm, lowered me gently into my chair. Cheer up. Don't think me hard with you, my dear, but as soon as ever you feel equal to it, get your shoes on and be ready. I did as he required, but I was left there a long time, praying for my unhappy mother. They were all occupied with the poor girl, and I heard Mr. Woodcourt directing them, and speaking to her often. At length he came in with Mr. Bucket, and said that as it was important to address her gently, he thought it best that I should ask her for whatever information we desired to obtain. There was no doubt that she could now reply to questions, if she were soothed and not alarmed. The questions, Mr. Bucket said, were how she came by the letter, what passed between her and the person who gave her the letter, and where the person went. Holding my mind as steadily as I could to these points, I went into the next room with them. Mr. Woodcourt would have remained outside, but at my solicitation, went in with us. The poor girl was sitting on the floor, where they had laid her down. They stood around her, though at a little distance, that she might have air. She was not pretty, and looked weak and poor, but she had a plaintive, and a good face, though it was still a little wild. I kneeled on the ground beside her, and put her poor head upon my shoulder, whereupon she drew her arm round my neck and burst into tears. My poor girl, said I, laying my face against her forehead, for indeed I was crying too, and trembling, it seems cruel to trouble you now, but more depends on our knowing something about this letter than I could tell you in an hour. She began piteously declaring that she didn't mean any harm, she didn't mean any harm, Mrs. Snagsby. We are all sure of that, said one. But pray tell me how you got it. Yes, dear lady, I will, and tell you true. I'll tell true, indeed, Mrs. Snagsby. I am sure of that, said one. And how was it? I had been out on an errand, dear lady, long after it was dark, quite late. And when I came home, I found a common-looking person, all wet and muddy, looking up at our house. When she saw me coming in at the door, she called me back and said, did I live here? And I said yes, and she said she knew only one or two places about here, but had lost her way, and couldn't find them. Oh, what shall I do, what shall I do? They won't believe me. She didn't say any harm to me, and I didn't say any harm to her, indeed, Mrs. Snagsby. It was necessary for her mistress to comfort her, which she did, I must say, with a good deal of contrition, before she could be got beyond this. She could not find those places, said one. No, cried the girl, shaking her head. No, couldn't find them. And she was so faint, and lame, and miserable, oh so wretched, that if you had seen her, Mr. Snagsby, you'd have given her half a crown, I know. Well, Guster, my girl, said he, at first not knowing what to say. I hope I should. And yet she was so well-spoken, said the girl, looking at me with wide-open eyes, that it made a person's heart bleed. And so she said to me, did I know the way to the burying ground? And I asked her which burying ground. And she said, the poor burying ground. And so I told her I had been a poor child myself, and it was according to parishes. But she said she meant a poor burying ground not very far from here, where there was an archway, and a step, and an iron gate. As I watched her face, and soothed her to go on, I saw that Mr. Bucket received this with a look which I could not separate from one of alarm. Oh, dear, dear, cried the girl, pressing her hair back with her hands. What shall I do, what shall I do? She meant the burying ground, where the man was buried, that took the sleeping stuff, that you came home, and told us of, Mr. Snagsby that frightened me so, Mrs. Snagsby. Oh, I am frightened again. Hold me. You are so much better now, solid one. Pray, pray tell me more. Yes I will. But don't be angry with me, that's a dear lady, because I have been so ill. Angry with her, poor soul. There. Now I will, now I will. So she said, could I tell her how to find it, and I said yes, and I told her, and she looked at me with eyes like, almost as if she was blind, and herself all waving back. And so she took out the letter, and showed it me, and said if she was to put that in the post office, it would be rubbed out, and not minded and never sent. And would I take it from her, and send it, and the messenger would be paid at the house. And so I said yes, if it was no harm, and she said no, no harm. And so I took it from her, and she said she had nothing to give me, and I said I was poor myself and consequently wanted nothing. And so she said God bless you, and went. And did she go, yes, cried the girl, anticipating the inquiry. Yes. She went the way I had shown her. Then I came in, and Mrs. Snagsby came behind me from somewhere, and laid hold of me, and I was frightened. Mr. Woodcourt took her kindly from me. Mr. Bucket wrapped me up, and immediately we were in the street. Mr. Woodcourt hesitated, but I said, don't leave me now. And Mr. Bucket added, you'll be better with us, we may want you. Don't lose time. I have the most confused impressions of that walk. I recollect that it was neither night nor day, that morning was dawning, but the street lamps were not yet put out, that the sleet was still falling, and that all the ways were deep with it. I recollect a few chilled people passing in the streets. I recollect the wet housetops, the clogged and bursting gutters and water spouts, the mounds of blackened ice and snow over which we passed, the narrowness of the courts by which we went. At the same time I remember that the poor girl seemed to be yet telling her story audibly and plainly in my hearing, that I could feel her resting on my arm, that the stained house fronts put on human shapes and looked at me, that great water gates seemed to be opening and closing in my head or in the air, and that the unreal things were more substantial than the real. At last we stood under a dark and miserable covered way, where one lamp was burning over an iron gate, and where the morning faintly struggled in. The gate was closed. Beyond it was a burial ground, a dreadful spot in which the night was very slowly stirring, but where I could dimly see heaps of dishonored graves and stones, hemmed in by filthy houses with a few dull lights in their windows, and on whose walls a thick humidity broke out like a disease. On the step at the gate, drenched in the fearful wet of such a place, which oozed and splashed down everywhere, I saw, with a cry of pity and horror, a woman lying Jenny, the mother of the dead child. I ran forward, but they stopped me, and Mr. Woodcourt entreated me with the greatest earnestness, even with tears, before I went up to the figure, to listen for an instant to what Mr. Bucket said. I did so, as I thought. I did so, as I am sure. Miss Summerson, you'll understand me, if you think a moment. They changed clothes at the cottage. They changed clothes at the cottage. I could repeat the words in my mind, and I knew what they meant of themselves, but I attached no meaning to them in any other connection. And one returned, said Mr. Bucket, and one went on. and the one that went on only went on a certain way agreed upon to deceive, and then turned across country and went home. Think a moment. I could repeat this in my mind too, but I had not the least idea what it meant. I saw before me, lying on the step, the mother of the dead child. She lay there with one arm creeping round a bar of the iron gate and seeming to embrace it. She lay there, who had so lately spoken to my mother. She lay there, a distressed, unsheltered, senseless creature. She who had brought my mother's letter, who could give me the only clue to where my mother was. She, who was to guide us to rescue and save her whom we had sought so far, who had come to this condition by some means connected with my mother, that I could not follow, and might be passing beyond our reach and help at that moment. She lay there, and they stopped me. I saw but did not comprehend the solemn and compassionate look in Mr. Woodcourt's face. I saw but did not comprehend his touching the other on the breast to keep him back. I saw him stand uncovered in the bitter air, with a reverence for something. But my understanding for all this was gone. I even heard it said between them, "Shall she go?" Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.